Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. I'm chomping at the bit to meet and get to know my guests, actors Melissa Weiss and Malky Goldman. Both women grew up in Brooklyn's Hasidic Satmar community, an extremely insular world that has very little to do with secular society, and had next to no knowledge of theater, film, television, all of which fall under the heading of sacrilegious. Briefly, Melissa, one of nine, entered into an arranged marriage at 19. 4 years later, she divorced her husband and shortly thereafter walked away from the only life she knew. Melissa went to Truro College, discovered a passion for theater and the arts, eventually becoming an actress. Her first professional role was playing Juliet in Romeo and Juliet in Yiddish, which premiered at Manhattan's Lincoln Center and won Berlin's Gerhard Klein, no relation, by the way, Audience Award in 2011. She recently acted in the off-Broadway production of God of Vengeance. Melissa has been featured in several movies and shorts, including Felix and Mara, Black Star, and The Visit. Malky, who has 13 brothers and sisters, grew up in Israel. Her family moved to Brooklyn when she was about 20. Malky met her future husband when she was 22 and, like Melissa, left her arranged marriage early on. After her divorce, Malky broke away from her community, went to college, and earned a bachelor's degree from Manhattan's Hunter College. She's new to the entertainment business, but along with Melissa, she was part of the cast of God of Vengeance. Malky is also a painter and has joined forces with Melissa to form their own film company, Malky Squared Productions. So, welcome to both of you, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi, thanks for having us.
So it says on the Malky Squared Productions website, quote, "We tell stories of women who are torn between two worlds, straddling the love and loyalty of family and being true to themselves."
Yeah, that is our life.
Mm-hmm.
It's living between. It's kind of like we chose this life, so now we have to take what comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this the pain or this, you know, feeling that you... that'll never go away, this feeling of, like, leaving your family and that loss, even though I'm really lucky and I have a relationship with my family. But, you know, it's not the same. It's not like how I grew up. So it's that in-between world, and we want to show people that, and there's, I think it's a universal concept of people making decisions that their family might not approve of or have wanted something different for them. And I think it takes courage, and there's all this nitty-gritty pain that at first, you know, when at first you leave, it's like this, all the big things, you're like in survival mode and you're like, okay, I'm going to do this, and you're surviving. And then as time goes on, there's all these little pains that you don't realize at first, you know, that's always with you, like little moments and little times that you just, it's just a part of you and you keep
this yearning and this longing. Is that what you mean by a little pain as opposed to trying to figure out how to do something very concrete?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
How am I going to make a living or how am I going to pay these bills
exactly.
or wedding?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's just the little things and like being part of your family and yet acting in things that they wouldn't come to, doing projects and living a life that they wouldn't really approve.
So how does one reconcile that? Because it's such great extremes.
Yeah. That's kind of our mission or our goal, and it's kind of...
with this company?
Yeah, there is really no, it's just to tell stories. It's really, there's no way really fully to reconcile that. It's just life. And I think there's so many people that have these experiences, you know, whatever you're doing that's different than your family or community or feeling other or feeling like you don't have a voice and just making that choice anyway, despite it being hard. And so I think that just life, and that's the beauty of life. So I don't think there's really a way to reconcile it. I think you can get closer to feeling at peace with it
mm-hmm.
and just living with it.
Malky.
So I think things that we have in common with other women, not only women who are living the same community that we do, that's why we say women, is because we really understand them. We get the idea of being torn between things because we are always nurtured to do one thing and we know our mission.
There was one path for you two to take, in other words.
Mm-hmm. And so for all different women who did not grow up Hasidic, and we always think, what I see in common with other ladies, other women, is that everyone who is pursuing a career, who has conflict, who is willing to, who had an affair or any of these things, feeling so much more guilty because you're a woman and this is not what you should be supposed to be doing, So I feel like with our upbringing, we just have these exact same understanding. Just it's even deeper, because on top of all of the things we have as women, we also have all of these rules on it. So for us to tell a story is just, if we look at any other woman in the eyes and she starts talking about her story, her struggle, her script, what she wants to say, we connect to the deepest of the deep right away. And we are like, we know exactly how it feels like. And we can bring this into life, into art. And we can show this to other people who are home and having the same struggles and feelings and think that they are crazy. And we can tell them, no, this is universal. We all feel like this. We all have these stories, whether you're growing up Hasidic or Catholic or just a secular girl in Manhattan, you will have all of these struggles.
Or on the farm in Montana and you say, I got to get out of here. Or I don't know if there are farms in Montana.
Whatever place you're not comfortable with, you have a right to just speak up and say, this is not working for me.
But when you speak up and say, this is not working for me, in many cases, as I am assuming in yours, it comes with intense consequences.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot to lose. And I think I left thinking I can lose everything. And I had to do it anyway because I needed to live. And at that point, I felt like I couldn't live. I didn't want to live in that world. And I just, if I want to live my life, then I needed to leave. Luckily, I didn't lose everything, right? But I don't know. I think the bravest moment is when you just say, you know, forget about everything and just, I'm going to do what I need to do because this is what's right.
Well, it was bigger than you. I got to do something different. Yeah. I got to get out of here. That notwithstanding, then there come the concrete, mundane things of this. Where the hell am I going to live? What am I going to do? What did you do? So here you are, what, 19? No.
When I left, no, like 23.
23. Yeah. Not that that's so much older, but okay, I'm out of here is basically what you say. And where are you going?
I found the roommate on like a Jewish website. So I moved in with her and I was working overnight to put myself through school. So I took out grants and then I worked overnight. So I worked in group homes with like, you know, disabled or delayed children and adults.
Sure, sure.
And yes, I worked overnight to put myself through school. And that was my focus. It was just survival. It was just doing what I need to do to survive.
But how did you know to do that when that's not part of your purview? That women in your community don't necessarily go out and get jobs. I mean, it's extremely restrictive. Where did that sense of self come in when you don't necessarily have role models?
I think actually that in the last decade, the women in the communities, women in the Hasidic community work. They work, they make a living, they bring up the kids.
They work within the Hasidic community. Yes. I'm not saying we're going to list all the rules, but it's very, very, very specific.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And there's not much room for flexibility, right?
Yeah, but I think that I don't know what comes first. If because we have the sense of self, we leave, or because when we leave, we decide we really focus on that sense of self because we need to, you know, leave and we need that courage and we need that self to really believe in ourselves to get out. I think for both of us, we definitely worked on that. Like you saved and...
I think that for me, I always save for the future.
Uh-huh.
And it started as soon as in one point of my life where I was working and I used to give the money to my father, but then I started realizing I'm making enough so that I can start...
Keep some for me.
Some way. I was also really lucky that unlike other girls in the community, I was an art teacher.
In a Hasidic school.
Private. I had
private
my own school since I was very, very young.
Mm-hmm.
And then people would just reach out to me to make portraits, to commission paintings. So I had a very...
So your creative juices were also flowing at a very young age.
Yeah. So I was, I mean, this is part of the reason I got married so late because I wasn't the regular.
Yeah.
But in the same time, when I actually left, when I made the choice to just go away from my community, in the same time, a lot of my clients stayed the same. So I did not have this urgency of finding a new life path. It was totally disconnected. I would get commissions to do portraits and to do a mural for a restaurant or whatever
within
it
your
was.
Community.
Within the community.
Yes, uh-huh.
And they would not want to acknowledge or even know, it wasn't even a conversation if I'm religious or not. It was just like, You've been working with us for 10 years. You'll work with us for another.
But you didn't have any formal art training, did you? It was just sort of a natural act for you to do these things.
Before, yeah.
What was it like when you finally broke the news to your mothers and fathers? We'll start with you, Melissa. How did that go over? Like a lead balloon?
Well, I never really broke the news. It's not like I didn't sit down with them and say, this is it. It was kind of just like a slow moving way. Mm-hmm. And then they knew that, and I also left my husband at that point. So they knew that I had gotten divorced and I was just doing my own thing because I thought I needed to leave completely. Otherwise, they would stop me. I felt guilt. I felt there was a lot of things I needed to break free and I couldn't confront it yet. Mm-hmm. And neither could they. So we didn't talk about it, but there was this feeling, there was just this, it was unspoken.
But and there certainly was a sense.
Yeah, and I didn't see them often because I felt guilty. And I think as time went on, I was able to have that conversation. And also when they saw that I was more settled, you know, because for them, it's such a scary world out there.
Yeah.
And they're worried. They don't know anything. They don't know what the world is like. So they have all these thoughts. And they know that that we weren't raised with the tools, that we're not aware of this.
Yes.
So they're worried for you. And they're really scared. So once they saw that it wasn't a phase and that I was more stable, then we're able to have that conversation a bit more. But that took years,
honestly.
It took years. It took therapy. It took a lot of understanding on their part and on my part. It took time to get to a place of being able to talk about it for me. Before that, there were just times and they kept wanting me to come back. And then it would just blow. There was just emotions. It was a mess, you know? And I'm lucky because my family is really wonderful and they didn't like... They weren't mad at me and just...
And they didn't disown you.
They didn't disown
me. Couldn't think of the word. And is your story similar?
Yeah, I never, until this day, talked to them about that. My family, they have no idea what I do with my life. All I do is I try to protect them from not finding out. They know I'm not religious, but it's not a conversation. My father once asked me years ago, I hear that you're wearing pants, is that true? And I asked him, do you want to know the truth? And he said, no. And I said, so don't ask me.
So don't ask me, yeah, exactly.
And he never asked again. And then the beginning of the process was them pretending like they think that I'm still religious and making different comments. And then this point, I mean, it's painful, but I'm also grateful for what I have. I am fully there for them, and I love them so much, but they have no idea what is happening with my life. And if I have an article in the Times with Melissa, and everyone is so excited, I am...
You can't share that.
Being so scared, can I still go home? Are they so ashamed? Is this... Let's just say every greatest thing that happens to someone in their lives... would be for me, for my family, the worst.
What would be a natural act for me to share, for example, with my family, you can't go to the people who mean the most to you.
Yeah, but even worse than that, it's not just can't go. I think it's also, you don't want them to find out. You kind of are terrified that they might find out more information, and maybe they'll keep you from the kids, and maybe they won't, you know, those things. There's always that fear. So it's an added, besides not being able to celebrate with them, is this added thing, and I think it's especially more for you, this added thing of, I might lose them, because now it's in the public eye, and because we don't really have that conversation, it's more like, let's just, you know, my mom also would ask, like, where are you going for Shabbat or something, and I'm in the city and I'm going home and she knows the time. And I was like, do you really want to know? Because I'll tell you if you really ask, but I don't want to offend them either. And it's such an important thing to them.
Mm. I understand.
So, so it's that double thing that they won't celebrate with you. Although I showed my dad that when the first play, we got a New York Times critics pick and I showed my dad the article. I was proud and I showed them. And so it was nice. I had to explain to him what a play was. and people come every day to the show. Like he didn't get the concept, which is very interesting.
Sure, it's fascinating.
He had only heard about like school plays that kids do one day for Purim, or he never really knew there was like a play that goes every day and people sit in there.
And they pay to come and see you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had to explain to
and
him.
And you're somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, you're not Melissa. You're playing the role of Juliet, you know.
I think he gets that because that's like in a school play, right? He thinks it's like a school play kind of thing.
Yes, but a school play is segregated. The girls,
that's true.
You know.
That's true. It was interesting. He's like, so did you already do that? I said, I'm currently doing that. So he's like, he didn't get it. I had to explain to him that every day I go to the theater and then people sit in the seats and then it was really interesting. But he saw the article and he was proud. It was nice that I was able to show it to him. The rest of my family, I just said, or maybe my sister mentioned, just that it was it got a great review, and they said, "Is it a good thing?" I said, "Yeah," and that was the end of the conversation.
Do you have relationships with your siblings? Can you spend an afternoon having lunch with your sister or you or your brother?
What was your question before? How do you reconcile? I think that's the way. That's the way. Just on a human level, we just connect.
Yes.
As people, I don't share much of my life, so that's it's not exactly how I want it to be. But on a human level, they, they're family and they're human beings and they get it. And so that's how
so,
I get to have
so
a relationship.
So you can go and spend a holiday with your family.
Yeah.
And you do that.
Of course.
That may not seem so obvious to people. You're doing something that is not approved of.
Yeah.
It's actually interesting for me, my experience. Every time I walk into the house, there is so much love. For me. My family is so happy to see me, and so am I. So happy to see them for this hour or two, and it goes great. And then I'm so happy to go home to my own life, too.
What an interesting dichotomy, It really is.
Yeah, but in the same time, if any one of my siblings would be in trouble, they would call me. I would go over for the afternoon, talk to them, and help them work it out. We are 100% in the fantastic relationship, me and my siblings.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Lately, I've discovered that one of my brothers is a troublemaker, and I had no idea what it means to have family being part of your life. And in the beginning, I pushed him away. He would reach out to me, and I was like, not responding. I felt very uncomfortable. This is my life, not my family's life. And then he showed up. The first time I realized what it meant is, at the play.
He came?
Yeah. He came.
Wow.
I didn't know he was there.
How old is your brother?
He's 34, I think.
I believe. And he was in the audience. Blown away?
Yes.
He came multiple times.
No kidding.
Yeah.
But I finished the show, and I am walking upstairs, and I see him, and he's giving me the biggest hug that he ever gave me.
So he was
me.
Really proud of you.
And he was so proud of me, and I'm like, wow. This is so nice. And I just started crying. I'm like, I can't believe you're here. I can't believe I have a brother. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, I want to be your brother and I want you to be my sister.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And since we are just, it's just so nice. I just involve him. I was just doing the other day art and costume for a film set. And I needed some stuff. And I called him and it was a Hasidic set and I needed a specific hat that he has, and I'm like, can I borrow it? And he's like, yeah, of course, what else do you need? And I'm like, oh my God, I have family on my side. I tell them what I do, they help me. It's amazing. I feel like I'm in a new level of a life where I have a brother.
Was it a difficult road to hoe to go to college? Both of you went to schools that are state schools, and there is tuition, but it's not the same kind of a thing as a private school. Was it just, for you guys, was it a natural act to go to college?
No, I was the first one in my family and in probably all my cousins. No, I think I had a cousin that went to college. And the first one definitely in my immediate family. And I went to it was all girls. It was a segregated college. So Touro has the segregated. That's why I went to Touro. So we went to schools that you could go to. And I went while I was working during the day and went at night. And then when I left, I switched my schedule. And then I went to the co-ed part of it, which was basically for, foreigners.
So
Which in a sense I was. That's true. Yeah. But, so it was I remember telling my mom that I wanted to go to college and she had to come and sign forms with me. And because it was an all girls, and they also had their own school in Borough Park at first where I lived.
Which is a section of Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they... it looked kind of like a high school. Like, it wasn't like what she thought college would look like.
Right.
So I did this. It was a safe way that I went to college. Yeah.
Gotcha. How did you manage in terms of the language? Because English was not your first language.
Well, I think that I was really interested. So I learned a lot.
I
absorbed.
You were a sponge.
Yeah.
And for you, going to Hunter College, was that hello?
It's interesting. I want to just back off a few minutes where when I came to New York, I had no idea what college meant. I only found out what college was from one of my students who I was teaching privately in her house, and her daughter was going to college. And I realized that, oh, you don't become a doctor suddenly.
Overnight.
Yeah. You go to college. And I started thinking about it. But then she told me, you know, my daughter is really smart and she's really struggling. So I was thinking, yeah, I can never do it. But then I actually started my college at Truro. And then I transferred to Hunter. When I went to sign up for college, she said, sign here. And it said signature, but it had two extra letters, so I couldn't read it. And she had to write, to point to me what signature, because the sound of signature or the sound of sign and the word signature didn't align with, and I had such a hard time reading.
So it didn't compute for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like,
what is this?
Can you just point to me?
Yeah.
This was my level of English. And then I took lots of ESL classes.
And so that was very helpful.
And English and math and everything.
You two are just real strivers, I mean, you know, and real determined. And creativity, although in your case is with art, you know, this natural act for you, was maybe not necessarily fostered within your community. So in my introduction, I said, Melissa, that you discovered you had a passion for acting. And I want to know how that happened and who helped you cultivate that passion.
You know, I didn't know a lot. I didn't know about movies, right? Because I didn't grow up with it. So it was never something in my head that I thought I can act. Although my mom brought up recently that she saw, she had some like slides or from like projector, what are they called? Something.
Slides were.
Slides. Of me acting. She's like, you were always an actress in school plays or something when I was really young. But that wasn't, I never thought of that. You know, I never considered myself to be an actress or any kind of artist or... Although thinking back, my grandma went to drama school.
No kidding.
She was born in America, in the Bronx, and she went to drama school. So, and then she married my grandfather, who was Hasidic. My grandmother wasn't
Hasidic.
So she Hasidic,
converted?
She was religious, but not Hasidic.
Okay.
And she was she was Americanized.
Gotcha.
But then my grandfather came from Europe, and then, so it's funny. So it's kind of,
in your blood.
Yeah, my mom used to sew and write songs and stuff. So I think there's creativity. It's just not fostered as much. And, like, it's not like, you know, you don't really hone those skills. And it's all, like, what I had in school was sewing, you know. And I didn't like sewing. I didn't want to sew.
I don't like sewing either.
Yeah.
And it doesn't like me.
Yeah, so it was just, I never thought of myself as a creative person. When I left and then I took a year off, I got my bachelor's degree. And then I was like, I knew I wanted to do psychology, but I wasn't sure exactly what field. I thought maybe forensic psychology, criminal psychology. I wasn't sure. And then, so I took the year in between to kind of, and then I was able to actually live my life because before that it was just survival, going to school,
gotcha.
And working like three jobs. And then it was just, okay, now I'm going to take this year in between. And then different opportunities came up. I had gone out with friends and so I kind of got scouted. So I thought of modeling and I never really got into that world, but it was kind of like new things for me, right? And then friends of mine were translating Romeo and Juliet in Yiddish. So they needed a Juliet. So I actually was almost going to sign to go to Asia. And it was terrifying for me for modeling.
No kidding.
And I was just like, I don't think this is my world. You know, it was just, I very much like hesitated about going into that world. But it was exciting to do different things. So I was very open to just doing new things. So, but I remember when I came to read for the director, I went to her apartment.
And you didn't know from nothing.
I never read Shakespeare. I had watched movies and I was in school at that point,
okay,
right? So
okay.
I wasn't like... But I never read Shakespeare, although I had heard about Shakespeare now because I had been to college. I never did an act. I remember picking up the script and not knowing how to read, being so nervous. It was never something that I thought I would do. But apparently, the film is a story within a story, and she focuses also on the fact that of our community and that we're new to it and the parallels of, like, she thinks, you know, it's very Shakespearean, the world that we're in.
Gotcha.
So she just liked me as the character. She thought I was the character. So then she took me, and it was just, I had no idea what acting was.
So there's a Yiddish word, and for those of you who aren't unfamiliar with it, it's called beshert, which means it's meant to happen.
Meant to be, yeah.
And meant to be, and I'm guessing that that was a beshert moment for you.
Yeah. I remember, like, it was very interesting for me, and it's funny because I had liked films. Like, I discovered that I liked independent films. I discovered the kind of music that I like, you know, because you start to explore everything. But I didn't really get what was expected of me. And, you know, I knew I had to know the lines. I didn't know what acting was. And I remember feeling like the first time we filmed, she said it was a trial, which we ended up using. And it was on green screen. And it was like the moment that Juliet has to drink the poison, right? So I'm sitting there and the way that she tells me I had to call for like nurse or right. And she screams so that I should scream. like I did not get what I had to do, and I wasn't brave enough to share my feelings. I didn't know what acting was. I really didn't. But then finally the camera's off, and it was so many, it was lights, and it's funny because I had done some shoots, but that's me, and I know what they expect, and this is just, I had to share my vulnerability. And so the lights are off, and I start to cry, and I look at my friend who got me into this because they need, and I was just like, I hate you.
Yeah, really.
And yeah, and then the light, everything is like finally is cut, and I start to really cry. And then she tells them to get that shot, and I want to clean myself up because my nose is running, and she's just yelling at me not to clean myself up. And I wasn't brave. Like, I didn't know that acting meant sharing myself
or taking your clothes off, exposing yourself in that way.
Yeah,
yes,
taking your clothes off though was easier than being vulnerable, right? Being vulnerable and knowing that's what's expected on screen. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that acting to me was an actress.
Yeah, I understand.
That's not me. I'm not a performer and like put things on.
Well, wasn't you?
I was, yeah. But it's still not how I see acting.
Approach it.
Yeah, acting for me is not putting things on. It's taking things off. It's taking layers.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
So for me, that vulnerability and people seeing
was
me
cry. Was a seminal moment.
Yeah. And then after that, it was so cathartic. It was just amazing. And then I loved it. It felt so good after. It was like, okay, I think I like this.
And maybe so much more natural. And for you?
My way of dealing with things was always by pretending to be someone else because I was put on an image. Then my whole life, it's always I get away from everything with humor, with making a joke of it, with pretend. Like, it's never my own self. And I think that what happened, and I loved playing. My whole family, we would make family plays. We have a lot of kids. We had enough characters.
Hello.
And we had weekly plays every week. Cousins, brothers and sisters. So it was always...
So it was a natural act for you.
Yeah. Oh, but then I wasn't going to do acting because it's so public and this is going to insult my family. But I loved it. I remember watching movies and be like... I want to do that. I want to...
You mean watching movies when you were still part of the community?
No, when
you left, of
when
course.
I left.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then thinking, I can never do this.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very public, and I don't want to do this to my family.
Right.
Back then. Now I don't want to, but my... I just want
to... It is what it is, yes.
And then what happened was, when it really clicked in my brain and I started taking classes, was I was really fortunate. I met through Melissa... We were both consulting in the film. And then the main actress was Vanessa Paradis. And because she's from French, she had a very similar accent to my accent, and I'm from Israel. So John Turturro himself asked me if I can read her lines so that she...
Be a stand-in for her, sort of?
No, just for her... To hear it.
Oh, okay.
And then it's easy. Then it's just to get how a Hasidic woman, she played a Hasidic woman.
Gotcha.
How a Hasidic woman from a different country would speak English. And I remember reading with him, you know, legend, and having so many feelings. Just reading. It was my first time reading a script.
And that's pretty big.
And then I walked out, and he was giving me a compliment. He's like, you're a natural reader. And I'm like, this is the best day of my life.
Isn't that amazing?
And I
wonderful.
And I walked out, and I was on a high for the day, for the week. Oh, my God, this was so nice, so nice, so nice. And then I thought, you know, it's okay if I take acting classes. Because I'm not really being an actor. I'm just taking acting classes. So I asked Melissa, where should I go? And she introduced me to acting classes. And I truly fell in love with acting. And then at one point I was just like, I'm done hiding. I want to do this.
Well, here's what I want to do. We're at the 30-minute mark, so let's stop our conversation and pick it up next week. Join us for part two of our conversation with Malky Goldman and Melissa Weiss. I'm Sandy Klein. Celebration of the joy.